The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway, where a few miles to the north, the Francis Scott Key Bridge was struck by a freighter, the 948-foot dolly. Flagged out of, I believe, Singapore, hit the Key Bridge this morning at 1:30 in the morning. It is completely down. There are casualties. They're in the water. Early reports, I don't bother with them. We don't know how many people. It was 1:30 in the morning. That is a small blessing, but it's a pretty horrific story. We'll follow it throughout the morning. Yesterday, the United States vetoed a Yesterday, the United States failed to veto a UN resolution that the Security Council brought forward by Russia, China, Iran, condemning Israel, not condemning Hamas. We abstained. We abstained. We couldn't say it was a good idea or a bad idea. There you have the Biden administration. Not surprisingly, within the day, Hamas told mediators it's sticking to its original position on a demand for a full ceasefire and a rejection of the compromise that the U.S. forced Israel to take. Hamas rejected the hostage deal, according to the Times of Israel, due to mistaken U.S. non-veto at UN, the foreign minister charges. And the U.S. non-veto is a moral, ethical lapse, according to the foreign minister of Israel. And Hamas's Hanaya, the guy who hangs out in Qatar, he's heading to Tehran today to get his instructions from Iranian officials. Putin has acknowledged that it was radical Islamists that shot up the Moscow venue. Donald Trump got some relief from the kangaroo courts in New York. And Ronna McDaniel wants to be burnt at the stake by the MSNBC crazies. I actually stayed up late last night and went over to CNN because, look, Laura Coates is a pretty good host. She's new. I hadn't met her before. So they asked me to come in and talk about Ron, who's been my friend forever. So I did. Here is my conversation last night on CNN with Laura Coates.
Joining me now is Hugh Hewitt, conservative commentator and host of the nationally syndicated Hugh Hewitt Show on the Salem Radio Network. He was also a political analyst and host on MSNBC and a panelist, of course, on Meet the Press. Hugh Hewitt, thanks for joining me here. The lawyer can't help myself. I want to start with the witness issue for a second, because the fact that she was on that call and the fact that this is going to be likely brought up at a prospective trial, does that give you any pause about her talking so freely as a pundit?
No, not in the least. In fact, one rule is what I usually use. And the one rule is, if there's a standard for hiring at NBC, let's make sure that that standard applies across the board for everyone, regardless of ideology. I think a double standard is being held up to Ronna. Now, full disclosure, she's my friend and has been for a long time. When I was with CNN pitching her for the debates that CNN didn't get for a lot of reasons unrelated to Ronna McDaniel or me or CNN, just didn't work out. Everybody loved her at CNN. Everybody loved her at NBC, because Ronna knows every single person in town. There will be one thing on which she cannot comment, that trial, but there will be a whole bunch of things that she can comment on. My one rule point, Jen Psaki, I think she did a great job over at MSNBC. But she was routinely accused of lying to the press about the Afghanistan debacle, so much so that chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the House, Mike McFaul, wanted to subpoena her. I thought that would be a silly reason not to hire Jen Psaki. She was in the White House. When people have sources, when they have news, when they have the ability to communicate, when you are as happy as Ronna is, and when you are in the heart of the demo, meaning you're a Michigan mom. She's a 51-year-old Michigan mom. And she's the heart of the demo for the news business that has to attract an audience. It was a brilliant hire. And the people who are complaining may have their own particular reasons for complaining. Some are ideological, some are personal. But the people at the top of that network, Rebecca, Caesar, other people, they're very smart. They're very good, just like at the people at the top of your network. And they made a choice to try and get back part of the middle of America. And the news business is dead if it doesn't get back that middle.
Well, you know, you mentioned Jen Psaki. Part of the distinction I think would be easily raised in response is that it seemed that Ronna McDaniel, in her conversations, in her recent interviews, has done an about-face on what she believes to have been the truth or not, and essentially saying, I was taking one for the team, I was not being authentic or truthful before, and now I'm being truthful about this issue now. Unlike, say, statements made as a part of one's job at presenting what the White House administration would want to do. In fact, I'm going to play for you for a moment here of what she was asked about the insurrectionists initially, and then how she changed her statements talking to Kristen Welker. Listen to this.
I do not think people who committed violent acts on January 6th should be freed.
So you disagree with that? He's been saying that for months. Ronna, why not speak out earlier? Why just speak out about that now?
When you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, right? Now I get to be a little bit more myself, right? This is what I believe. I don't think violence should be in our political discourse, Republican or Democrat. And I disagree with that. I agree with him on a whole host of other things.
Obviously, she's saying now, before I was a spokesperson, now I'm my own person talking about these issues. And one could see that particular point. But the idea of authenticity, I think, is what is coming back for many people. Am I to believe you now or to believe you then? Because essentially, you're being paid in two different ways. When is authentic authentic?
Well, I think the same rule that would apply to Jen Psaki should apply to Ronna McDaniel. You'd better persuade me in the here and the now that you're telling me the truth. Now, when Jen came off of the White House podium, or when Tony Snow went to the White House podium, they came in with baggage or they left with baggage. It did not disqualify them. When Mike Huckabee went to Fox or George Stephanopoulos went to ABC, or I could go right down the list. I saw Carville the other night, James is a friend on CNN, and he's a paid contributor, and James is starting
to. But
the heart
Hugh, before you go down that line, I don't want to cut you out. Before you go down that line, though, just I want to be clear on what we're talking about and why specifically they have criticized Ronna. It's been about election denialism, not just generally views about relating to the policy considerations or relaying what the administration thinks about a particular issue. It is really at the core of.
No, I must disagree with that. I don't believe that's why they're really criticizing her. I think they're really criticizing her because she's the conservative. I worked there for 4 years. All right. For 4 years, I did that. And it's the most left-wing network in America. It's more left-wing than your network. It's certainly more left-wing than ABC. MSNBC is. It owns its space. And that 1% is very important to their profit volume. NBC News has to hit a much bigger demo. So they're doing the best they can to bring in people like Ronna, who knows everyone. So I ask you as a news person, you're a professional. If you want to find out, let's say, what John Thune and John Cornyn are doing in the Senate race, who's ahead to succeed Mitch McConnell? There are only two people really in the running. Maybe Rick Scott gets in. Who are you going to call? Not Ghostbusters. You're going to call up Ronna McDaniel and say, would you run this down to us and come on Meet the Press this weekend and give us an informed point of view, as opposed to journalists talking in a green room about who they think has got strengths and weaknesses. To me, it's very, very easy. Do you want to attract an audience? And NBC is a publicly traded company, and they need to bring in audience, and they need to bring in ratings. And so Ronna is perfect.
Is that the standard for a news organization, that you want, that the goal is not to convey information and report, but instead to have an eye simply towards the ratings? I mean, you're a conservative. You said yourself. You were there for 4 years. I don't recall, and maybe I've missed all of your negative press in that respect, Hugh, but you didn't get this backlash.
Oh, I did.
I mean,
you're too young.
No, well, thank you. And I do look the part. But when you talk about the level of criticism in terms of not just based on your ideology, but she is being attacked because they do not believe that she is saying information, but that she is trying to serve and please two masters as is convenient. And that wasn't your standpoint, was it?
I can't read her mind. I can't read her critics' minds. All I can tell you is that she's a superb professional who knows everyone in town and will be a fine journalist, just like George is on ABC. And he was in the White House for 8 years with Bill Clinton, just like Tim Russert was. And Tim Russert used to work for Mario Cuomo, just like a whole bunch of people in this town move from the activist to the position of being an analyst or a commentator. And it's perfectly fine. One set of rules for everybody. And unless you're going to be a purist and you come up for the ranks and you never work in politics, that's not me. I worked in and out of politics very, very closely with Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and all sorts of different people along the way. You just bring it with you, and then the audience will judge. What ought not to happen is there to be a gatekeeping set at MSNBC, typically on the hard left, that does not want America to hear a persuasive point of view from the center right. And Rana is from the center right, and she's the demo they need to get in order to win audience back so that everyone can hear NBC, not just a little slice of the left.
What about the idea that they believe vilified the media more broadly and now is a part of it?
Well, I vilify the media every day on my radio show. Yes. And I vilify myself, too, because, you know, I get things wrong. I got something wrong last week, I think, on Special Report when I said the Georgia governor ought to pardon somebody to Brett, and the Georgia governor doesn't have pardon power.
Right.
We all make mistakes. Every single person in journalism, if you introduce me to a journalist that they don't make mistakes, they're not a journalist. They're not honest with themselves. I don't think some of her critics are being honest with themselves, Laura. She'll be a fabulous commentator.
Well, we shall see. The critics are not silenced and perhaps not afraid of what you said, but we'll see what happens.
You
bet. Hugh Hewitt, thank you so much for joining.
That was my my first trip to CNN in a long time. Laura Coates, very smart, very affable. Opened with a hard curve inside up around the chin as opposed to what do you think about Ronna McDaniel? But all told, fair. I'll be right back, America. Lots going on this morning. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Good morning, America. Pray for the people in the water. Hopefully they are not at the bottom of the river. The Francis Scott Key Bridge down this morning after a 1:30 a.m. collision with a tanker. It just hit one of the pylons. It went down. Kaboom. Those of us who grew up in Ohio and remember the Wheeling, West Virginia Bridge going down, hate stuff like this. And it's just a terrible situation. I want to take you to Gilad Erdan. The United Nations Security Council allowed the ambassador from Israel to speak after the United States, much to its shame, much to the discredit of our country, abstained on an evil motion that does not condemn Hamas. It just stood by. It abstained. It couldn't say it's good. It couldn't say it's bad. It abstained. It's just so Joe Biden. Here is Ambassador Erdan, cut number 6.
This is a disgrace. Colleagues, it was the Hamas massacre that started this war. I repeat, it was the Hamas massacre that started this war. Nearly 6 months have passed, and the Security Council still has not condemned the child-murdering rapist that began this war. The resolution just voted upon makes it seem as if the war started by itself. Well, let me set the record straight. Israel did not start this war, nor did Israel want this war. Israel disengaged and withdrew from Gaza 18 years ago. We wanted a ceasefire and coexistence. You can repeat here slogans and purport to know for the Palestinians what the Palestinians seek, but this won't make it the truth or the reality. The Palestinian representative here is lying through his teeth when he says that his people want to live side by side with Israel. By the way, as you probably know, he does not represent Hamas. He does not represent the Gazans. They did not choose him to speak for them. His leader, President Abbas, refuses to even condemn the massacre, and he continued to pay terrorists.
Okay, continue with Ambassador Erdan, cut number 8.
The release of the hostages should have been the number one priority. When it comes to bringing the hostages home, the Security Council must not settle for words alone, but take action, real action. It is unfathomable that when it comes to releasing the hostages, we still only see inaction. Not a single step has been taken by the Council, aside from symbolic words. Yet, when it comes to the situation in Gaza, the Council rushed to take action. You appointed a special coordinator and established a monitoring mechanism. The Council visited Rafah to see the aid shipments firsthand, and the Secretary General has already visited Rafah Crossing twice. Why do our hostages not receive concrete action? What have you done to advance their release? Colleagues, following this Council's adoption of UNSCR 2712 and 2720, which both called for the release of the all hostages, Hamas did not stop to even contemplate for even one moment. It should be very clear that as long as Hamas refuses to release the hostages in the diplomatic channels, there is no other way to secure their return other than through a military operation.
So I want you to understand what happened here. The United States did a jam down on Israel over the past 2 weeks, obliging Israel to accept a ridiculous release of hundreds of murderers and criminals in exchange for 40 hostages. Israel finally agreed to do that. They said, okay, we will do that. Then they had to send the acceptance of Israel's acceptance of the United States demand down into the rat hole where Sinwar is hiding in Hamas. And Sinwar must have MSNBC cabled in, and he learned that the UN had failed to veto the Security Council resolution condemning Israel. And therefore, he thought, I'm winning. I can hold out here. I got a pretty good refrigerator. I got my snack bars. And he rejected the release of the hostages. So yesterday's abstention by the United States is not only a moral failure, it was a tactical disaster and a strategic blunder. The people running this country, Joe Biden, Tony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, have no idea what they're doing. I want you to understand it. They have no idea what they are doing.
Woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. Found my way downstairs and drank a cup. And looking up, I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat.
Good morning, America. I've got my cuppa right here. It's got the Abbey Road cuppa. And it's one of those mornings. I do not normally do 10:30 hits on CNN, but I wanted to go out and speak on behalf of Ronna McDaniel and the idiots at MSNBC who are melting down. You know, I do think it's a great opportunity for Caesar and Rebecca, who run the place, to just fire them all. Just fire them all. No one will notice. Just go out and find another bunch of screwball leftists who don't know what they're talking about and will repeat the talking points. No one will notice. Your ratings are fine. They're only 1% anyway. Just start over. Just say, you know, litigate with us. You go on air, you don't clear with us, you rag on the network, and we're done with you. Just go clean it out. Has to happen sometimes. Happened at Boeing today. Goodbye, everybody at Boeing. Well, MSNBC is the Boeing of American networks, and they ought to just clear it out. But it is a busy day, a very, very busy day. So let me get back to the news if I can. The former president was in a New York courthouse yesterday for the Kangaroo Court criminal trial. Meanwhile, the Kangaroo Court civil trial got smacked down by the appellate court. The $464 million bond got knocked down to $175 million. Trump's got to come up with about 3% of that to post the bond, which he can easily do. I mean, that's $10 million bucks or something like that. So he can post that. And the trial, he'll win on appeal. And he's going to get convicted by the Manhattan jury. I'm telling you right now, he's going to get convicted. And then he'll win on appeal because that's a nonsense case. I almost used a bad word. But the former president was out there yesterday, cut number 13.
Thank you very much. Judge Ed Gorin has done a terrible disservice to the state of New York. What he's done is terrible. Businesses are fleeing. You see that? We just released a statement on truth. Businesses are fleeing and crime is flourishing all over the state. And what he's done is such a disservice and should never be allowed to happen again. New York State is being battered by his decision. So I greatly respect the decision of the appellate division, and I'll post either $175 million in cash or bonds or security or whatever is necessary very quickly within the 10 days. And I thank the appellate division for acting quickly. But Judge Engoron is a disgrace to this country, and this should not be allowed to happen. Thank you very much.
He is a disgrace to the bench, and I think you all know that Judge Crash Test Dummy really screwed this one up badly. Later on, Donald Trump says this, cut number 14.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a great honor to be with you at 40 Wall Street. And we appreciate you have a lot of press outside, and I think we're going to start before a lot of them come in, which frankly always makes me happy. So
A lot of things happened today. This is all about election interference. This is all Biden-run things, meaning Biden and his thugs, because I don't know if he knows he's alive. And it's a shame. It's a shame what's happening to our country. This is election interference. They are doing things that have never been done in this country before. We've never had anything like it, certainly not at this level, but we've really had nothing like it that I've been able to find. It does happen a lot in third world countries, banana republics. If you look at what we just left, you have a case which they're dying to get this thing started. The judge cannot go faster. He wants to get it started so badly. And there's tremendous corruption. You have Pomerantz, Mark Pomerantz. He was Hillary Clinton's lawyer, or Democrat National Committee's lawyer. He worked in Paul Weiss. He walked in and he took over the district attorney's office. Nobody's ever seen anything like that to prosecute Trump.
He's absolutely right, by the way. He's just so right. We've never seen anything like this before. I think it's helping him, by the way. Cut number 15, Donald Trump.
The case is a hoax, and it's something that shouldn't have. It's not even a crime. They say there's no crime, and there is no crime. So I just say it's a sad day for this country when you have something like this. And remember the words, should have been started 3 years ago if they were going to start it at all. And then you wouldn't be quibbling over what week it's going to end, days. They're quibbling over days and hours. They wouldn't be quibbling at all. They never started it. And you know why they didn't start it? Because they didn't know I'd be running. And they didn't know how well I'd do. And if I were not running, or if I were doing poorly like everyone else has done, because they're all gone, they're all knocked out except for crooked Joe Biden. If I were doing poorly, this wouldn't be happening. None of these trials would have been happening. If I wasn't running, they wouldn't be happening. So it's a sad day in our country in many respects. But the good day is that the appellate division was fair. It's a lot of money still, but the judge is corrupt, in my opinion. He's the most overturned judge. He's been overturned 5 times in this case alone. He ruled against me before he even knew anything about the case. He ruled against me. The whole case was all about damages, and there were no damages. And perhaps you'll get him to tell you about what took place in terms of a settlement negotiation, because those weren't the numbers he was discussing. Those weren't the numbers. It's a disgrace what's happening in our country. And we have to get our country back, and we're going to get our country back. That's what's going to happen. November.
Judge Engoron is the crash test justice, and they call them justices. They're trial court judges. A very undistinguished, indeed, obscure career. The cabbie turned lawyer got himself a gig, and he finally got on TV, finally got a case, and he just ran with it. And one more, Donald Trump at the New York courthouse, cut number 16.
And if you read the Andy McCarthy article, or Jonathan Turley, or many of the legals, I think almost every single one of them, that's not even a crime. We're being tried for something that's not even a crime. They say at most it's a misdemeanor, but there's no misdemeanor either. So we have violent criminals that are murdering people, killing people. We have drug dealers all over the place, and they go free and they can do whatever they want. But they go after Trump. Where there's not even a crime. And did you see the number of people were there? You had Colangelo and behind him. And remember this, Colangelo was a DOJ guy. He's a Biden DOJ guy. Why is he in the Manhattan DA's office trying the case?
Donald, don't try and get anyone under. It's a ram job. Everybody knows it's a jam down job. Andy McCarthy was cited by the former president. And in fact, Andy was on Fox yesterday with Dana and Bill. Cut number 17.
What has happened here is Alvin Bragg's taken one transaction, which years ago, if you brought it at all, should have been a misdemeanor falsification of business records, in which there are no victims. Again, nobody got harmed by this. The state wasn't deprived of any tax revenue. He's carved that up into 34 acts that he's labeled as felonies that could put Trump behind bars, theoretically, for over a decade. Over a century. So it's a terrible case, but the judge has been pretty much a rubber stamp on everything that Bragg has wanted to do, including his theory.
It is a terrible case. It's a joke of a case. It's like the civil liability case, as is the Jack Smith case in D.C. I have yet to see the Trump defense and the documents case, so I have no opinion on that. But just generally,
three out of four are jokes. And the E. Jean Carroll I don't talk about because I don't know anything, but it seems to me the statute of limitations were created to stop circuses like that one. You know what doesn't stop? The Alliance Defending Freedom. They will be arguing at the Supreme Court later today. I'm going to talk with Greg Clugston, I hope, at around 9 a.m., just before 9, who will be out there in the very cold steps of the Supreme Court waiting for ADF to try and win their 16th case in the last two decades. They're going to argue about the Administrative Procedures Act. I don't want to bore you. It's not an abortion case. Everyone thinks it's an abortion case. Not an abortion case. It's about abortion pills. But whether or not the Administrative Procedures Act was followed. Now, support Alliance Defending Freedom today. You can go to the Stand With ADF banner at the top of HughHewitt.com. You can call in a donation at 855-374-4123. Welcome back, America. Senator Tom Cotton joins me. Good morning, Senator. Welcome.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be back on with you.
Yesterday, the United States abstained. It abstained when Russia, China, and Iran brought a National Security Council UN Security Council resolution to the floor. What did you make of America's abstention?
Well, unfortunately, Hugh, it should come as no surprise to anyone. I mean, first of all, America has been abstaining from strength and confidence in global leadership for 3+ years under Joe Biden. And second, remember, this is the exact same team in the Biden administration that led another anti-Israel, anti-Zionist resolution goes to the Security Council in the United Nations in December of 2016. So it was outrageous, deeply offensive, strategically stupid, but again, not surprising coming from Joe Biden.
Now, I got to ask you, do you think he actually made the decision? I mean, do you think Joe Biden said abstain on a Security Council resolution, or was it Jake Sullivan or Tony Blinken or Susan Rice?
Well,
because
it's just so stupid. Yeah. I get the question a lot from Arkansans about whether Joe Biden's actually in charge. And my answer is usually on the big things, especially on foreign policies, of course he's in charge, because only Joe Biden could screw things up as badly as he screwed it up over the last 3+ years. As our friend Bob Gates, Barack Obama's own Secretary of Defense, who saw Joe Biden up close, once said, he's been wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security question of the last 40 years. That was 10 years ago, so we need to update Secretary Gates' statement to say the last half century. So I have no doubt that Joe Biden was personally involved in the decision to abstain from vetoing an anti-Israel, anti-Zionist resolution at the United Nations Security Council. Again, Hugh, this is not some ordinary run-of-the-mill resolution about deploying African Union peacekeepers to yet another war-torn country. This is the United Nations once again targeting Israel, as it has for almost its entire history. That should always rise to the level of the President of the United States.
Okay, we're guessing here, but in that famous song from Hamilton, the musical, In the Room Where It Happens, let's assume they had an Oval Office meeting and they knew that this was coming and they sat down and you've got Joe Biden and I don't know who the chief of staff is. It's not Zients. I can't remember. And you've got Jake Sullivan and Tony Blinken and our U.N. ambassador, who's probably in New York waiting for a phone call. I mean, what do they say to each other? Do they have any idea that the next, within a couple of hours, Hamas rejected the deal that the United States obliged Israel to accept and put forward to Hamas? Do they connect the dots?
Of course they did, because, of course Hamas did, I should say, because they are very savvy manipulators of international opinion, and they watch people like Joe Biden and the Democrats he has around them, and they know that they can just keep saying no, and Joe Biden will keep moving to their position. That's exactly what's going to happen to you. What happened, passed yesterday at the Security Council is going to become Hamas's new baseline to negotiate more concessions. I don't know if this administration thought through those implications or not, or if they just viewed it through the lens of UN Security Council politics, like, well, we already vetoed one and they vetoed ours, so now it's time to strike a deal, as if, you know, it's a city council horse trading over who's going to get streetlights, or for that matter, their own domestic politics. I worry, Hugh, that the domestic politics, though, is really just a cover for their deeply held anti-Israel ideology. I mean, Hugh, you've heard a lot of people, Joe, and you've read the memes online that says, you know, Joe Biden is now conducting Middle East policy to win a single city in Michigan, Dearborn, to try to maintain viability in the Electoral College. Part of me worries, Hugh, that they're actually using that as an excuse to do what they actually have always wanted to do, with Israel, especially the United Nations, as we saw at the end of 2016.
All right, now I want to switch subjects on you, Senator. You've got a staff of I don't know how many people, let's say 20 people. Yesterday on MSNBC, there was a coup underway against Cesar Conde and Rebecca, who run NBC Universal and hired Ronna McDaniel. And they all came out and ragged on their bosses. And they ragged on Ronna. And I think they actually tortiously defamed her. And I think they created a hostile workplace. And I think they opened NBC to vulnerability on a legal basis. But if your staff did that, you know, if you went on the floor of the Senate and you voted A, and then everybody in Senator Cotton's office said, boy, what a moron, what a dummy, this is horrific, you can change your mind, Senator, what would Tom Cotton do?
Well, first off, Hugh, they wouldn't even have to do that. I fire them on occasion on principle just to strike the fear of my staff everywhere, like Cesare Borgia. Obviously, what's happened is NBC shows the lockstep ideological wall that you have at these mainstream media companies. You know, NBC decides to hire one Republican, Ronna McDaniel, and they are up in arms, openly rebelling on air. I guess Chuck Todd missed the irony that I think a former Democratic operative was literally seated at the same table as him Sunday morning when he was denouncing his bosses for hiring a political operative. But everywhere you turn on MSNBC and CNN, you have former Democratic operatives. And that seems to be hunky-dory, okay, with Chuck Todd and Joe Scarborough and the rest. But hire one Republican? Nope. Open rebellion on the air.
Well, do you think, I mean, I really do think this is a moment in time when NBC could just come in and salvage their brand by firing everyone at MSNBC. Because it was wall to wall yesterday. And I thought to myself, does the entire country realize that these people are nuts?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a good job of demonstrating that to the entire country, Hugh. Again, these are, especially on MSNBC, which has portrayed itself not as a straight news broadcast, but as a opinion or editorial network. And it's fine if they want to be left of center, but you'd think that they would at least on occasion want someone like you, as they once did, to provide an alternative viewpoint. You know, one person on a panel of five, for instance. But no, you hire one Republican and they immediately man the ramparts to protect ideological uniformity at their network.
Now, I made an argument last night on CNN that if you wanted to hire one person who could get in touch with any Republican within two phone calls in the United States, it would be Ronna McDaniel. She could get to Trump. She can get to Tom Cotton. If they want to know who was ahead in Cornyn versus Thune and they wanted to get someone off the record, wouldn't Ronna be the person you'd hire if you really cared about the news?
I think that's a point well taken, Hugh, you know, because by virtue of being the RNC chair, you end up dealing not just with senators and congressmen, but governors and state legislators, and state party chairs, and so on and so forth. You have a very widespread cross-section of opinion within the Republican Party.
Yeah, most Americans don't understand that both parties have state committees, and then they have county committees, and they have county chairmen, and then they have activists, and the RNC is massive. And if you've been running the RNC for 6 years, you actually know every Republican who matters in the country.
Yeah, that's right, Hugh. It's that, you know, the RNC, you know, has 168 elected members. The chairman obviously knows those people very well because that's his or her constituency, and those people know their state parties very well. So the RNC chair, you know, whatever you think of or the DNC chair for that matter, whatever you think of the job they may or have done in their role, they have a massive, massive network of people who can provide them information, insight into what Republican leaders and Republican grassroots activists are thinking.
Boy, I just think it would be the greatest thing in the world if NBC just gave everyone their papers today and said, see you in court, you're gone. All right, I want to read to you from news items this morning. When Speaker Mike Johnson opened the floor for questions at a closed-door luncheon fundraiser in New Jersey last month, Jackie Colgan asked how, in the face of vehement opposition within his own ranks, he planned to handle aid for Ukraine. What followed was an impassioned monologue by Mr. Johnson, which he explained why continued American aid to Kyiv was, in his view, vital, a message starkly at odds with the hard right views that have overtaken his party. He invoked his political roots as a Reagan Republican, denounced Vladimir Putin of Russia as a madman, and conceded the issue had forced him to walk a delicate political tightrope. Reminded by Ms. Colgan, a member of the American Coalition for Ukraine, a nonprofit advocacy group, of the adage that the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil was good people to do nothing, Mr. Johnson replied that he kept a copy of the quotation framed in his office. That's not going to be us, he assured her. We're going to do our job. Now, I haven't heard Speaker Johnson say that, but I applaud him for doing so. What do you think are the odds of getting Ukraine the aid it needs, Senator Cotton?
Well, Hugh, I have heard Speaker Johnson say something similar, certainly when he's spoken to Republican senators, but also in public as well, that he's committed to making sure that we provide Ukraine the tools they need to defend their own territory. He's got to put together the vote coalition, obviously, in the House of Representatives, and that's tough these days, as it always is, because you've got a lot of other competing priorities that are urgent, too, like, for instance, providing Israel the aid they need without providing billions of dollars of aid going straight to Hamas fighters, and protecting our own border, through which we have God knows who coming in. When you look at the kind of attack you saw in Moscow over the weekend from an affiliate of ISIS, or you look at the chaos we have in Haiti right now close to our own borders, these are all urgent priorities that Speaker Johnson's members want to address, and I want to address them as well. And he has said, now that we have passed the bills to fund the government through the end of this year, that he's now going to be turning to some of these other legislations, this legislation that's been percolating, like the effort to try to make sure that we support and achieve all those priorities.
All right, last question, Senator. The four Tajikistani passport holders who entered Russia and proceeded to do the atrocities, any reason why those Tajiks couldn't have gotten on the Darien Gap train and flown into Panama and walked in? They didn't have to bring their guns with them. They can get their guns here. But, I mean, any reason why they wouldn't do that here?
Well, I don't see much reason, Hugh. You know, under questioning last week by me, the commanding general in the Middle East for our troops there said that he thought you could have this kind of mass casual attack anywhere in Europe and Asia with little no warning in 6 months from Afghanistan. It turned out to be 6 days. He said it might be a little bit longer for the United States, but we know for, or anywhere else in the New World, but we know for a fact that we have people flying from all over Eurasia and Africa into Latin America and then crossing at our southern border. And the simple reason is they can get in. And as you say, once they get in, they can probably obtain access to the tools and the materials they would need to conduct such an attack. I mean, again, one thing, it's an echo of the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan 2.5 years ago, but also it's an indictment of Joe Biden's border policies as well.
I agree. I just don't imagine him being reelected. Senator Tom Cotton, always good to talk to you. Thank you, Senator. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The insurrectionists at MSNBC are damaging Ronna McDaniel's reputation. They are creating a hostile workplace, and they should be fired. It's that simple. It's run by the crazies, and the crazies cannot run a news organization and drive off conservatives. I got asked by CNN. I never do late night TV, right? I just never do it because I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do this show, right? So I'm on at 10:30 at night. That's giving me 5 hours of sleep. But I'm going to replay this for you because I went on last night with Laura Coates, who's a very fine young journalist at CNN. She was filling in for Abby Phillips. And unless we got Brett calling in. And oh, hey, Brett, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I was on CNN last night because Laura Coates invited me on to come and talk about my friend Ronna McDaniel. And I don't want to put you in a bad position about talking about other talent, but I just think this is so danged unfair to Ronna McDaniel. I mean, Jen Psaki's over there. George Stephanopoulos is at ABC. Everybody uses former officials. What do you make of this meltdown?
It is quite something. I mean, for all of the talent, or most of them, to be that vocal about their boss's decision to hire someone. You know, obviously, former political operatives and staffers have been on TV for a long, long time. And Chuck Todd is a Democratic staffer, former. George Stephanopoulos, as you mentioned, you know, Simone Sanders, all kinds of folks. We have Dana Perino, obviously, White House Press Secretary, Kayleigh.
The best. I mean, really the best. And so, I'm a Reagan guy and I was a Nixon guy. It's just an absurd rule that they don't want any center right voices.
It's less about the fact that the person did work in that realm. I think it is more about Trump specifically. And what's interesting is that there is no want or need to have any window into the thought process of someone who supports Donald Trump. I mean, every Republican that they have really is fairly anti-Trump. And
yeah, I lasted 4 years. I was it. I was the one I was the one pro-Trump guy. I'm not even pro-Trump. I'm objective. And I lasted 4 years.
Yeah, but you could give a window into how a Trump person thinks.
Yeah. But, you know, Brett, this model won't work long term. You can't live on the 1%. You got to have 3% or more, like Special Report. You got to get a demo that's healthy. She's a Michigan mom. What don't they like about this?
Well, I think they don't like specifically the election stuff and what she said in various times about the 2020 election. Now, she was asked specifically about that by Kristen Welker and said what she said, that President Biden is a legitimate president, that he won fair and square. That was not good enough for them.
Last question on this. Yeah. Michael Steele is an RNC chairman. I don't know what Michael said in 2000, whatever years he was there, but I'm sure he said very partisan things, and they didn't care because he was willing to turn on Trump. I really do think they're creating a hostile work environment, and they face massive liability if they don't shut these people up. But that's further if he saith not. Let's get to the big news. The United States abstained, Brett. They abstained. Either you can vote for something or you can vote against something, but to stand back and say, I don't know, when you're the superpower that leads the world, what did you make of that on the Security Council resolution yesterday?
Yeah, I thought it was a big, big moment. I think the hinge point probably during this time was Senator Schumer's speech on the floor that, you know, castigated Bibi Netanyahu and kind of set the table. But that is clearly a policy decision, despite everything that Kirby said from the podium, that this is not a change in policy. Israel sees it as a big change in policy. And if you read the resolution itself, it does not mention the word Hamas once. And there is not direct linkage between the long-term ceasefire and the release of hostages, or that one has to come before the other. And, you know, to abstain essentially is a nod of go ahead. You know, pass it. And I think that that's a policy change.
You know, in the last month of the Obama administration, they did this. They passed a hostile to Israel UN Security Council resolution that we did not veto. This is, I think we're going to see realignment on this issue, Brett Baer, because I don't think they're doing enough to garner in the Arab American votes that support the Palestinians. I don't think there are many people who support Hamas, but there might be. And they're certainly driving away supporters of Israel. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think around the edges they do. I think they're trying to make the case that this is Bibi Netanyahu specific, but I think that they're reading the room wrong and that you're going to have some in the other party in Israel that have a real problem with abstention on that vote. And you're clearly going to have problems with some American Jews who feel like that was the wrong move.
Now, you know, I look at someone like Sherrod Brown, who's running in Ohio. Ohio has a huge Jewish community in Shaker Heights and in and around Cleveland. I think of Philadelphia. They have a huge Jewish community. Detroit, my roommate from college lived in Detroit, Jewish kid, big Jewish community in Detroit and Michigan. These are swing state Jews. I just don't think that they understand what they're doing.
I agree with you. I think that politically it is they're trying to walk this tightrope. And as of late, they've tipped towards the progressives and the Arab American voters who have expressed concern about Israel policy, you know, and I don't know. I haven't fully figured it out politically, but I know that they're trying to pass it off that this is not a policy change, which Israel clearly thinks it is.
Now, Brett, you are probably as well wired as anyone in Washington, D.C. And so if you don't know, you don't know, and no one knows. Who is running the White House? Because the president is clearly, Hugh Hewitt's opinion, is infirm and can't do it 24/7. Somebody is providing him the sheet with the three options, and he's picking them. But who are those people? Is it Jake Sullivan? Is it who is it?
Yeah, I don't think we fully know. I think Jake Sullivan has a lot of power. I think maybe Susan Rice has a lot of power behind the scenes. But I don't think it's one person. I do think it's a number of different behind-the-scenes staffers who have provided a lot of we're going to go this way or this way. But it's hard to believe that the president is active on all of these decisions.
Very last question, Brett. He's at 40% according to Gallup, which is up 2% from 38% last month. But if you're at 40% and it's April, you're in trouble for a November election. HW was in this position in 92, and I saw it coming. Do you think he can recover from this?
We have a long way to go, and I've stopped making predictions.
You and me both.
Yeah, because it's a very dangerous game. I think it's going to be an ugly election, Hugh, as you know, and we don't know how it's all going to play out. I do think that he has taken a couple of steps up in recent past couple of weeks, the president has, in not only that Gallup poll, but also some swing state polls. But the advantage, if it was held today, would go to the former president, and he would win.
Right. I agree with you. Oh, a bonus question. How much do you think the civil liability case is helping or hurting Trump? He won a big win yesterday, getting down to 175. He's going to win that on appeal. The Bragg case is starting up in April. How do you think this is playing? These are the two wrong cases for the Democrats.
I agree with you. And I talked to some Democrats who said they feel like it shouldn't have come forward and that they think that it helps him. Those are Democrats talking. You know, randomly.
I hear that, too. I hear that,
and,
too.
And I could buy that.
Brett Baer, always a good to talk to you. Want to remind everyone, a great sponsor of the program is MyPhDWeightLoss.com. Generalissimo went on that program more than a year ago, lost 50 pounds. He's kept it off. And stress eating is not allowed, I don't believe, even though we're under a lot of...
Sure tempted to this week, aren't we?
Everybody is. But we don't... I'm sure they give you tricks of the trade to combat that, because that's one of the habits. You broke that habit. You're not going by Del Taco or Taco Bell.
Have not. No.
You haven't relapsed.
Have not relapsed.
And that is and it's healthy, it's wise, it's productive.
864-644-1900.
That's
864-644-1900.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. No updates for you on the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge last night. No number on fatalities or people survived and rescued. I'll keep you posted as news arrives. It's early. It's still dark. I'm joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner and Fox News contributor. Good morning, Byron. How are you?
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's what's coming for you this morning, Byron. The Spanish Inquisition. Are you ready? Ronna McDaniel. Yeah. Ronna McDaniel and MSNBC. Who should NBC fire? Everybody at MSNBC or Ronna?
Well, I think the question is who they're going to fire, and they're going to fire Ronna. By the way,
you know, they can't do that. They cannot do that.
Well, why can't they do that?
Because they will forever be banned from a Republican debate. They'll never get another Republican on their show. And everybody in America will know what we all know, which is Rachel runs the network. And I actually think Caesar and Rebecca run the network. And they don't like this. It's a mutiny.
Well, remember when the New York Times editorial board went nuts about the entirely sensible Tom Cotton op-ed its editor published, they all went nuts and got rid of the editor. I think this is entirely possible. By the way, I was watching last night. I was on Special Report last night, so I'm driving home, and I'm thinking, well, it's going to be Ronna night on primetime on MSNBC. And Joy Reid's show did two long segments just bashing Ronna McDaniel, just bashing her. And then I didn't tune in again until I saw Lawrence McDonald just bashing her. And the only question I had, and maybe some of your listeners can tell me, is Jen Psaki was actually on in primetime last night. And I'm wondering how she handled the situation, given her personal history.
You know, I brought her up. I was on with Lauren Coates last night on CNN. I rarely stay up late, Byron, as you know, because I got to get up early.
And so I went over to CNN last night at 10:30 and did about 10 minutes with Laura saying, look, Jen Psaki got subpoenaed by Mike McFaul because she lied about the Afghan debacle from the front of the White House. Why in the world? And I don't mind her being on. She had one job. Now she has another job. I just think if you let the inmates run the asylum, and as has been happening at NBC News for a long time, their brand is going to be broken at NBC. It's broken at MSNBC. It's like a madhouse. It is a nut house. And therefore, if they want that brand to spread, they will yield to their 1%. I want to give you this number. Fox News averaged 161,000 in the demo throughout the day, the demo being adults 25 to 54. CNN posted 87%. MSNBC, 84,000. 84,000 people in the demo watch MSNBC. Why in the world would you let these people program your major network?
You know, I mean, this is interesting. I should say I'm a longtime Fox contributor, and I think Fox is the best.
It is, by far.
And I'm actually, sometimes I'm kind of amazed at how bad the other places are. And, I mean, this is just one of those situations. I do think that what we've seen is this small group, and of course the NBC talent are a small group. You could put them in at any network. You can put them in a small room. And they have all convinced themselves of a certain view of the world, which is that Trump is evil, must be held to account, and all of his enablers must be held to account. And they cannot be allowed, because Rachel Maddow, who you earlier said runs the network, has gone back and forth in her public statements about whether the network should ever even broadcast a single word spoken by Donald Trump.
Oh, they're the thought police. It's Orwellian. But here's the deal. I just did the debate with them. And I love Lester. I love Kristen. I love Caesar, who runs the place, and Rebecca, who's number two, and Carrie Budoff-Brown, who ran the debate. And they're all smart news professionals. And there were 40 people in a room at one point. And later on, I said to one of the executives, how many people do you think in this room voted for Trump? And they said, well, I don't know. I said, me. I voted for Trump. Nobody else. And that's a problem, Byron. That's a real problem for news organizations. They don't know what they don't know. Rana, actually, I can't think of anyone who is actually better positioned in Washington, D.C., who's not named Mitch McConnell or Speaker Johnson, who knows what's going on inside of the RNC everywhere. Is there anyone who knows more about the Republican politics of Washington, D.C. than Rana McDaniel?
Well, no, she has been running the place. And by the way, we should say that that NBC has another former chairman of the Republican Party, Michael Steele.
Oh, yes, I love that. Yes.
Who, by the way, presided over the party's 63-seat pickup in 2010, I believe it was.
No, President Obama presided over that, Byron. That
was well, he gave a big assist. But if you listen to Michael Steele, I mean, he's completely on board with the entire MSNBC view of Trump. And I just think that, you know, Britt Hume said this last night on Special Report. He was talking about the New York Times. There's not a single pro-Trump voice.
No, it's absurd. It's crazy. It's absolutely freaking crazy.
Their idea of a diverse array of voices, as far as Trump is concerned, is that people who is having people who oppose Trump from the left and people who oppose Trump from the right and people who oppose Trump from the center. That's their idea of a diversity of opinion on Trump.
And if you're trying to build an audience, I mean, you really want to be a news show. You run it like Brett runs it. And if you want to be an opinion show, you run it like Tucker ran his, or Laura runs hers, or Sean runs his. But if you want to be a news show, you got to have people who actually read the news. And I'm not sure anybody reads the news at MSNBC. They write up scripts. It's just not real. Do you think Joy reads the news? And Joy's a friend of mine. I get along with her fine. I get along with everybody. I'm not mad at anybody. I just realized they're going to lose the rest of their audience because it's boring.
Well, you know all these people, and I actually don't. But I would say that there is, they're not going to lose all of their audience because there is a core resistance audience out there. And I was just actually looking at top Apple podcasts, and the number one podcast is MSNBC's Prosecuting Donald Trump podcast. It's run by Andrew Weissman, who's hoping to realize his lifelong goal.
Oh, gosh.
Seeing Donald Trump go to jail. But there is an audience. And the interesting thing is, I believe all the research has always shown that a far more politically diverse audience watches Fox. That is, more Democrats.
Absolutely.
More Republicans.
I get critics and I get applause whenever I do Fox. Let me ask you this, Byron. The news business is broken badly, and I don't know how you repair it. And Axios ran this very funny, unself-aware. The only people who are smart read Axios. That's their audience. But everybody else is broken. And it was really amusing. Self-awareness is not high on everyone's list inside the Beltway, Byron. Is there any way to put Humpty Dumpty back together again? I mean, can an ordinary newscast, John Chancellor style, win anymore? Can they actually work?
John, you mean, no, I actually don't think so. I mean, I think in 1970, in any city, big city, medium city, you had three TV stations for ABC, CBS, NBC, and they each aired a 30-minute newscast, and it was produced by a small group of people within a block or two of each other in Midtown Manhattan who read three newspapers. New York Times, Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal. And most of the time, you know, if there's something like the bridge collapse, they go out and cover spot news. But a lot of their news was actually kind of illustrating stories that were in the three newspapers.
That is exactly right. And the only guy who does anything like that anymore is Brett. Brett does that almost every night. Here's what's going on in the world. By the way, we have a panel at the end, and we'll talk about it. And it's unfortunate that news streams are now completely broken because I don't really know how you have an election in a country that doesn't share a narrative. Byron York has a narrative, which is truth, and you can always trust him. Folks, so many people I know are disheartened that our country seems to have forgotten the importance of citizenship, and they wonder how a strong sense of citizenship might be revived. That's why my friends at Hillsdale College have produced a free online course on the topic, American Citizenship and Its Decline. Taught by historian Victor Davis Hanson, the course traces the history of citizenship and explains how it is undermined in America today by open borders, by identity politics, by the administrative state, and by globalization. Americans taking the course will gain a deeper insight about the connection between citizenship and freedom, an insight they can share with family members, friends, and neighbors. Hillsdale's free online courses are an important component of Hillsdale's mission to reach and teach increasing millions of people on behalf of liberty and the American way of life. So sign up today for Hillsdale's free online course, American Citizenship and Its Decline, by visiting hughforhillsdale.com. That's HUGHFORHillsdale.com. Hughforhillsdale.com. Start your free course today at hughforhillsdale.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. David Drucker is with the Dispatch. All right, David, since I'm abstaining, maybe you have an opinion. Do you think that Team Biden, that brilliant group of geostrategists from the 18th century Metternich camp, anticipated that Hamas would reject their jam down on Israel hostage demand offer within minutes of their abstaining on the veto on the UN resolution.
Yeah, look, Hugh, I'm not sure, right? But look, I think we've seen this. I think there are a number of things going on here, right? I mean, number one, as a matter of domestic politics, I think Joe Biden is trying to shore up support in Michigan and just shore up support among younger voters broadly. Younger voters, generally speaking, don't have a very high opinion of Israel. Now,
I got a question. That's, when we're talking about Joe Biden, you say younger voters, that's everyone that's 80 and younger. So who are we talking about here?
Right. But we're talking about the 18 to 29 cohort that turned out in huge numbers for him in 2020. It's in a very important part of his coalition. Now, look, as I have been saying, the Democrats have a problem on the other side of this potentially, which is suburban voters around Atlanta and Philly and Detroit, where there is a considerable Jewish vote, but also just a considerable suburban vote that is not going to respond to, you know, throwing Israel under the bus the way younger voters are. So this is not just as simple as, you know, plugging one hole here. You plug one hole, you could unplug another hole. And look, you and I have watched this for decades, right? I mean, from a center-left perspective on foreign policy, the belief has always been that if you can treat the Palestinians with a certain amount of sympathy and play hardball with Israel, that will help fix the problem. I think it's an honest viewpoint. It's not a viewpoint that has ever really proven true, but it's the place where they are. And it goes hand in hand with this idea that if you can cut a deal with Iran on nuclear weapons, if you can allow Iran to access some money for humanitarian purposes internally in their country, that you can placate them and better deal with them. It's just a different way of looking at things.
I believe it's a sincerely held view. I do. I believe it's a sincerely held view. And I think that the Nazi guards at Auschwitz held sincerely held views, and that didn't make them any less of war criminals.
But I don't think it's the same thing, right?
Because, but Hamas coming over the border and killing babies and children is the same thing.
Yes, that is the same thing. But it's not the same as being an American policymaker and having a misguided view on foreign policy, is all I was saying.
Well, you know, we had a guy named Breckinridge Long in the State Department in the 1940s. He wouldn't let any Jews in. He was the guy that stopped. That's why we eventually had to have the Refugee Settlement Committee set up in 1944, because Breckinridge Long would not let Jews into the United States trying to escape from Hitler. And I do not understand these people. I know they're sincerely stupid, but they're still stupid.
Right. I just think I like to keep apples with apples here. Right. I mean, we're dealing with a, you know, latter half of the 20th century view on how Israel should be handled vis-a-vis American foreign policy. Look, the Democratic Party used to be much more sympathetic to Israel than the Republican Party, and it has flipped over the past 30 years or so. And in particular, Democrats don't like Bibi Netanyahu because he didn't get along with Barack Obama, because of, you know, how they felt he went around Obama in trying to kill the Iran deal in the United States Congress. And so there's a lot of animosity there. And look, I think the president is in a bind from a matter of domestic politics. And we'll see if they can figure out that there's no placating Hamas, that Hamas did this, in fact, with the goal of getting Israel to, number one, not make peace with Saudi Arabia, number two, come in. They can blame Israel for targeting civilians, and they can muck up the U.S.-Israeli relationship.
But I would direct everyone who is interested to listen to Dan Senor with Haviv Redig-Guri yesterday. When Ehud Olmert was the prime minister of Israel, he did the 2006 deal, and the same people said the same things about Israel then. They are anti-Semites, Palestinians, whatever they may think. Hamas is an evil terrorist organization, and the U.S. threw the state of Israel under the bus yesterday. But I'm abstaining from David Drucker's decor at his beach house, because I'm not quite sure that wall's got enough on it there, David, to make the wall raider good. You better keep that off the wall raider.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.